Hey, members of the Hub, great to be with you in this interview. I'm interviewing today Rob Mason. Rob Mason is a good friend of mine, has pastored in Perth, WA for nearly 30 years now, has an itinerant ministry, Shame Off You. We'll talk a little bit about that during the interview. He's also working in aged care as a chaplain, been married 27 years, has two adult children. Welcome, Rob, to the Members Hub.
Thank you, John. It's so good to be with you and all your members.
Well, it'd be great chatting with you about a whole range of things. We're going to start off with a 60 seconds lightning round. You ready to go?
Let's do it.
What's your favorite food?
Favorite would be Italian, except recently, as in probably 12 months, I've gone gluten-free. So that's been challenging. No pasta, no pizza.
Ooh.
But I still love Italian.
What's the best book you've read in recent times?
Recent times would be Eugene Peterson as Kingfisher's Catch Fire. He's just a wordsmith, and I just love his writing, love his heart.
Great. Your dream holiday destination?
Well, I've just got back from Bali for the – I think we've been there for about 10 times.
Wow.
And the traffic, volcano, earthquakes, yeah, it's probably no longer my favorite. So maybe Fiji. I'll try Fiji.
Okay. Cool. Besides Jesus, who's your favorite person in the Bible?
That would be David. I love David because he's masculine, he's a poet, he's a warrior, he's a king, he's vulnerable. So all those things about masculinity, I think, really is captured in David.
Cool. What's your favorite downtime activity?
It'd be a bit of sport. I love surfing, jogging on the beach, and then reading. Love to read, play the guitar, or get a few of those major chords out, or maybe an E minor from time to time if I'm feeling a bit.
Little Led Zeppelin lead breaks.
Yeah, come on, rock and roll.
Coffee or tea?
As of 3 weeks ago, I would have answered coffee, but I've just gone caffeine free. I do it periodically, just
pray for you,
please. So what you're hearing now is not caffeine. This is just Rob late afternoon. I'm all natural.
Book or podcast?
Definitely books. I just love paper.
Beach or mountains?
I love the beach. Waves, surfing, body surfing, running on the beach.
Jog or bike?
I used to be a cyclist, but yeah, some people may be aware that we've had a few accidents here in Perth. Our motorists aren't that tolerant. And I think, yeah, because of that, and I don't look great in Lycra, I decided to.
Who does?
So, yeah, I just stick to jogging on the beach. That's my thing.
Good. Awesome. On your website, you talk about robmason.co is your website.
Yes.
We'll put a link to that in the interview page here. But on your website, you talk about how your world imploded in 2007.
Oh, yeah.
What happened in 2007?
Okay, therapy time. We're going back. I'm lying on the lounge.
Get on the DeLorean and go back in time, back to the future.
No, 2007 is a memorable defining year. And I use the word imploded quite intentionally on my website because that's exactly how it felt. All was going quite well as our church. We were growing steadily. Probably had at this stage 150, maybe 200 members. Yep. We had a great not-for-profit indoor play center that was thriving. And, you know, the church was in a good place and appointed a young couple there, brought them out of the corporate world, very high-capacity couple. They're going to lead youth, young adults, associate pastors. So everything was set for what I was ready for, my best year ever.
Right.
And so on one particular evening in February 2007, I invited this couple with my wife to meet a C3 pastor from Sydney who was going to spend the weekend with us, preach, do some leadership meetings. And I knew within an hour he was going to say to me, Rob, these guys are amazing and you guys as a church are about to explode. So I'm, you know, we've taken our orders and for our meals, and in a moment, and I literally mean in milliseconds, all I can describe is I had this feeling of absolute terror.
Wow.
And my heart started pounding. My breathing went all over the place. And I'm not one to want to draw attention to himself, but I did. I just ran out of the restaurant. I didn't think of, oh, this doesn't look good. What will Karen think? What will this couple think? I was so terrified. All I could do was run out of the restaurant. No plan. Got into the car, not thinking, oh, Rob, what are you doing? I just sat in the car, absolutely terrified.
So and there was no warning to this
nothing.
At all.
It just came out of the blue. So out of the blue. And I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know. All I thought was happening is I was having a meltdown. I was having a mental breakdown. And, you know, then I thought of my father who, after a year or two in ministry, had a meltdown and was clinically depressed. He was out of ministry for over 10 years. And I thought, oh, I'm just going to, I'm going to be like my father.
Oh, no.
So anyhow, the story goes, because I'm just in my car, but Karen stays with a couple saying, hey, hang in there. I don't know what that was, but ministry is really good for your health. And the same three pastor came in the car and it was just, what's going on? It was just, I have no idea, but I'm just overwhelmed. I'm terrified. I think I'm having a breakdown. And I'm crying uncontrollably. And he was great. He was just,
my goodness,
Rob, everything's going to be okay. We're going to get through this. And in time, I calmed down and went back in the restaurant. I didn't eat very much. But in my mind, I'm basically saying to myself, Rob, you're out. You're disqualified. You can't be a pastor. Wow. You'll be resigning. Right. And so,
So those thoughts came that quick?
Very quick. Rapid fire. Which is actually part of the issue, which I'll get to in a moment of, you know, some of your listeners will know what's happening. It's like, oh, Rob had a panic attack. Well, I know that now. I didn't know there was a name for it. I just thought it was just a meltdown and I was going to be, you know, institutionalized. And so anyhow, I talked to a lady in our church who is in mental health. I explained what had happened and she just said, oh, Rob, you just had a panic attack. And it was like, excuse me. I said, well, what is that? And she said, oh, look, it's adrenaline and, you know, it impacts your breathing, your heart. I said, yeah. And she says, I've got a colleague and I'll set up an appointment for you on Monday. And so this happened Friday night. So Monday's pretty quick.
Wow,
so somehow I got through the weekend. This guy's preaching, doing leadership meetings. There was even a meeting where the team got to speak into my life and the things I'm doing well, the things I could improve on. And I'm just in la la land thinking, hey, don't worry, guys, I'm about to resign because I'm losing it. So I end up meeting this counselor, but I realize she's not just a counselor, she's a cognitive behavioral therapist. CBT, which I've never heard of. And basically her style of counselling is, or her premise would be, for most people, the cause of an anxiety disorder, panic attacks, is your thinking. So if we could look at your thinking and what are those things that are causing anxiety and breathing exercises, and that will change your, that will help you calm down, lessen the cortisol, which is a stress hormone, and slow everything down. Of course, all I wanted from her was medication. I thought, look, if you can give me medication and I can get on with ministry, that would be so much better.
You give me the pills and I can get out of here and get on with my life.
So we go on this journey and, you know, I wanted the quick fix, but it was probably 12 to 15 one-hour sessions with a lot of work in between those sessions where I had to do journaling and a whole lot of different exercises, breathing exercises, taking an inventory of my thoughts. And over a period of time, I realized, wow, a lot of my thinking is negative.
Wow. So could I ask you, Rob, during you're having 12, 15 sessions with this therapist, did you experience any other panic attacks during that time as well, or was it just this one
thing? It was pretty well a daily experience.
A daily experience.
And sometimes multiple times. So what was happening, I was actually, because I had a panic attack in a restaurant, I then had an association every time I go to a cafe and a restaurant. And for those who are pastors, you know, we spend a lot of our time meeting people.
Yeah, sure.
It would be the panic of panic. What if I have another panic attack in
having a coffee with a member of the church or someone like that?
And I'm this amazing pastor guy who's, you know, our church is growing and
get a reputation for running out of cafes in the middle of coffees.
So every time I was in a cafe meeting with someone, there was just that dread of it could happen again. And again, I'll talk to my therapist about it. Okay, Rob, well, your thinking is creating anxiety. And so she took me through an exercise, and it's really easy to remember. It's three C's. The first C, catch your thought.
Right.
So if you imagine you're a fisherman, you're on this beautiful lake and the fish are your thoughts and you start catching fish. Right. And so I started catching all of these thoughts, and apparently I don't know whoever researched this, but I've seen it on Google, so it must be true. But we have about 50,000 thoughts a day.
Right.
Thereabouts. Yep. And so I realized every time I was catching my thoughts, it would be, I can't cope. What will people think? I can't do this.
So
I'm not good.
You were having these thoughts, but you weren't kind of consciously aware of them?
I wasn't aware of it.
Okay.
So just by thinking about your thinking and doing an inventory, which, you know, I've never done before, I was thinking, my gosh, I reckon 60, 70% of my thinking is negative, catastrophic, always worst-case scenario.
Can you give us an example of a worst-case scenario that would come upon your thinking?
Okay, so say if I had a difficult discussion with a person in the church at night, I would catastrophize it by going, okay, so they're going to be offended and they're going to talk to these people and they'll talk to those people. That person's the leader. They're going to step down. Now, if they step down, they'll step down. Now, if those people step down, tithes and offerings are going to go down, so I'm going to have to reduce my staffing. And no one ever taught me.
So you would kind of lay out a thought that would go over – and results that were going for days and weeks into the future sort of thing.
And that was my normal. And I just thought, well, that's just what you do. Isn't that what everyone does? And I talked to Karen about it. She said, no, I just don't think those things. And I think, well, well, I think about those things all the time. And so just having that as self-awareness, catching the thoughts. Yeah. And
so,
then
Rob, just before we move on to the next thought, or the next element of those three elements. So there's a difference between a catastrophic sort of thought process, which takes you into all sorts of bad scenarios, compared to, say, someone rings you up and says, hey, I want to catch up with you, and you have a thought, oh, okay, I wonder if this is bad news or good news or whatever. And then you kind of go, okay, whatever, I'll just go and have a coffee. I mean, that's, I guess, normative thinking.
Yes.
But you would go into a rolling sort of downhill.
I would role play it. I would.
Right. So into all sorts of bad scenarios.
Exactly. My first thought, which is probably for a lot of pastors or leaders, you know, hey, I would like to catch up. This is said, oh, you know, what have I done wrong?
Then
most people probably then move on and I'll have the conversation. I don't move on from there. I stay in that place and role play it in worst case scenarios. 90% of the time after the conversation, I would think to myself, what a waste of energy. I've just spent all of this. But that was my normal for over 30 years, over 40 years actually.
So, excuse me. So you capture the thought.
Next thing, you challenge it. You start thinking, you start asking a few questions. Number one, it might be, where did that come from? So where did that, I can't cope, nothing good ever happens to me, it'll fail, where did that come from? So, you know, with a therapist, we would look at some of the issues with my dad and some childhood trauma, things at high school, those sort of things. Then you might ask a question like, where's the evidence? Where's the evidence that I can't cope or this is going to happen? And you really start really getting to the nitty gritty of, Rob, this thought is random. It's just a thought. And I had this, how do I put it? It's almost like I just thought every time you have a thought, it must be right.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I don't know why. I just thought,
Yeah.
I'm thinking it must be right. And then, you know, the therapist saying, Rob, challenge it. Where did that come from? Is it true? Where's the evidence? And for me, it was like, and is it biblical? And it's like, well, no, and it's not true.
Right.
It is. A lot of it is in my mind. It's a pattern of thinking. It's habitual negative thinking, and it's manageable. You can change your thinking.
Wow.
So that was the second stage of, and you've got to be quite brutal. And another good question was, how has that thought served me? And then I start thinking, well, it has distracted me. It has robbed me of joy. It has robbed me of confidence. It has been soul-destroying. And then you actually get, in a healthy way, you get angry at the thought. You get angry at this. I've actually believed the father of lies for all of these years, but I'm taking responsibility because it's me that thought it. It's not.
Right.
No one else put those thoughts in my mind. Rob Mason put those thoughts. I've challenged it. Now you get on to the third C, and is basically you replace those toxic thoughts, or you change those toxic thoughts with biblical, life-giving thoughts. You know, almost like the opposite, you know. So the opposite, I can't cope. God will be my strength. You know, God will restore my soul. Mm. It's God's church. It's not my church. Mm. If those people leave, it's okay. It's not my church. You know, it just you start role-playing a different scenario. You start telling a different narrative. And it is amazing. Now, it sounds easy, but when you've had that type of thinking for 40 years, it has taken several years to change my thinking to where it is now. However, there are times when I'm under pressure, I still default back to the catastrophic, but I can quickly, now that I've got the self-awareness, it's like, okay, Rob, old pattern, come on.
Yeah. What did you find most difficult initially to do? Was it catching the thought, challenging it, or changing it? What was most difficult to do initially?
Ooh, brilliant question. Catching it was quite easy.
Okay, you're right.
It probably was the changing. You know, I could do. Okay. I could catch it. I could, you know, is it true? No, it's not. Where's the evidence? There is no evidence. Okay, now change the thought. Oh, it's just.
What do I go to think about?
It's a discipline. Like in my thinking, it required discipline. It required energy. Right. It required attentiveness. It didn't come natural. And it was just that. It's almost like I was learning to reprogram my brain, which, you know, biblically it talks about renewing your mind and pulling down strongholds, and that's hard work.
Yeah.
So and I'd say it was the changing.
And at times, I guess you're emotionally stronger than other times, and when you've got that emotional strength, you have mental strength to go, all right, I'm gonna meditate on a scripture now, or think about something happy. I'm going to think happy thoughts, or happy truthful, solid thoughts, rather than this kind of shady lies. But other times when you don't feel strong, it is, you know, I can understand that. I can relate to that. It's hard to kind of focus in on that. So did you find that over the years you've been able to build some habits or resilience into those three C's to make it more a part of your world?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's definitely a lot more of emotional resilience, self-awareness, a confidence in, if you do these things regularly, you know, meditating, chewing on God's word, those life-affirming words. If we get time, I can, you know, share with your listeners, you know, a basic breathing exercise that just, you know, sort of changes your physiology, just calms you down, and, you know, movement, exercise. I'm still, and I will be honest, I still am vulnerable. So I don't think it's something been there, done that. I think it's still an area I'm vulnerable, but I've got an awareness that I'm vulnerable.
Yep. You know, I think that's helpful, really, that the truth is that all of us are.
Oh, yeah.
excuse me, have our mental demons, as it were, or thoughts that we have to keep coming back to, fundamental principles that you're sharing. I'd love to jump in some of the breathing or other areas. I was going to ask you if if the leaders who are listening, pastors and leaders who are listening, if you could give them what, so let's say, give me three practical things that will help a pastor or a leader take better care of themselves in a preventative sort of way. Yes. As well. But also if they, you know, most of us get overwhelmed at times with anxiety or fear or concern.
Yes.
What are three things you could say leaders could do that would help them take better care of themselves?
Yes, no, that's brilliant. And let's face it, I think even pastoring 21st century 2018, it's church life is a lot more complicated, intense.
Yeah, totally.
There's a lot more pressure, expectation, social media, comparison, highlight reels on social media of all these pastors who are doing so much better than I am.
How come everyone's succeeding? I'm not.
Yes. It is unusual to talk about breathing because it's a natural thing. You know, we don't, I've got to breathe. No, it's voluntary. We just breathe. But unfortunately, when we're living constantly in this place of stress and adrenaline, it's a vicious cycle. It does impact your breathing. It becomes shallow. It becomes rapid. And what that does, it increases our adrenaline level. So we start getting into a bit of a fight, flight. You know, I've got to make this phone call, or, you know, I'm preparing this message, overwhelm. And so there's adrenaline, there's a stress hormone called cortisol. And through breathing, we can actually switch our whole physiology within about 5 minutes through deep breathing.
Run us through a breathing exercise.
There's a number, like there's probably at least 15, you know, and
one will
at
do.
Least. But let's just give the one that I was taught, it's called 3-3-3, the number 3-3-3. So what you do, you breathe slowly through your nose, not your mouth, slowly through your nose on the count of three.
Yep.
Reason through your nose is because you're breathing in, you're getting less oxygen. When you go through your mouth, you know, you actually start hyperventilating, which increases adrenaline. So breathe slowly through your nose, count of three, one, two, three. Then you hold your breath for a count of three, one, two, three, and then you breathe out, one, two, three.
Through your nose again?
You can breathe through your mouth or your nose. It doesn't really matter. The key with breathing, though, it's amazing when you talk to someone, say, take a deep breath, and they breathe through their chest, their shoulders come up. Yep. You breathe through your belly or your diaphragm. What you can do, if you've never done a breathing exercise, put your hands on your belly, and when you breathe in, you should feel your belly going out. That's your diaphragm. You're feeling. Now, as you do that, what happens in your physiology is adrenaline starts dialing down, cortisol starts dialing down, serotonin, it's like a natural antidepressant starts increasing. Now, the fascinating thing about this, in Eastern philosophy religions, kids at the age of five are taught breathing exercises.
Okay, right.
It's a natural part of their philosophy, their religion. But isn't it interesting in the West, who teaches us these breathing exercises?
You know, you just think, just do it subconsciously.
Just breathe. That's awesome. So that alone, doing breathing exercises a number of times a day. So don't just think, okay, I've done it. So next time I have it's got to be part of your daily routine. Now, the first thing when you wake up, do some breathing exercises before you go to sleep, before you make a phone call, before a meeting, before you preach.
So you can use it anytime you like, really.
You can just start doing your breathing exercises, and it's just – and while you do your breathing, even say something quietly to you, be still, be still. You know, God is with me. God is with me.
So give me a second one. I can see you're a fanatic about breathing exercise. You want to fill up the next 30 minutes with this. I'm going to move you on.
We could. There's all these others.
I know. Google it, folks.
Another one, and look, we've all heard it, but I'm going to use a different word. So rather than using word exercise, I'm going to use the word move. We need to move more.
Yeah.
you know, run, jog, walk, skip, dance, whatever, but every day. And even a few times during the day, you know, you might be sitting down preparing a message, whatever. Just get up for a couple of minutes, do a few squats, walk, you know, walk to the letterbox, do a few push-ups. Just regularly move. And again, physiology and mind, the whole thing is just, you know, say things as you're moving. In Him I live and move and have my being, you know, just say, hold, just move. Get the heart rate up. Do a bit of strength training.
Cool. Well, also get a stand-up desk. I'm at my stand-up desk right now recording. Stand-up desk.
You reckon that helps?
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. I move more because I've got a stand-up desk. Absolutely. Had it for about 10 months.
Yes.
And would never go back to a sit-down. I mean, I sit down sometimes, but stand-up, I can stand up 6-8 hours at my desk and work. Love it.
Now, the last point. And a lot of listeners will go, oh, it sounds selfish, me time.
Okay.
Every day, do something, you know, it might be half an hour, but just do something that you love doing.
Great.
However, don't have your phone on, don't have no social media, just have all your notifications off and just have some time where whatever it is, read, watch something, listen to a podcast, but just have some time. Me time is not selfish because it's all about, you know, self-care is not selfish because as leaders, if we're not in a good place in 2007, it caught up with me. And so it's just that sense of, hey, yeah, I've got to look after my body because you can be the most passionate person in the world, got great convictions, but if your body is letting you down, you're not guaranteed of longevity in ministry. So, yes.
Awesome, Rob.
Look after yourself.
Very good things. I like that. And now you have launched a ministry called Shame Off You. I really like that rather than Shame On You.
Shame On You, yes.
Shame Off You. So if folks wanted to contact you, talk to you about that, get you into minister or to preach or to read your blog, robmason.co
website. In touch. So, yeah, there's a few blogs and there's a – if you want to become part of the Shame Off You tribe, it's a free thing. Awesome. And you just sign up and you get a few articles. And but the whole thing for me was it's not just the journey of my mental health. It was the shame of my mental health.
Right, yes.
And so it was my ministry now is it's come out of my pain. My pain is my platform. And so I just know shame is a huge issue, not just in our – members, congregation, but I think in pastors, leaders, a lot of us are carrying shame and we're not even aware of it. And it's so impacting.
Yeah.
So shame off you.
Good on you, Rob. I love this. So helpful, this interview. Well, let me wrap up with the question I always like to wrap up with. You're going to have a dinner party and you can invite four leaders from any era, living or dead. We'll exclude Jesus. We'll just count Jesus as the... He'll be in the room, okay?
Yes.
I'd like to take that off the table. Sorry, Lord, we'll get you off the table because otherwise people feel pressure to say Jesus. But four leaders from any era, living or dead, who would you have?
Okay, my list will be, I'll say the list and then I'll explain why. Yep. Moses.
Yep.
Mary of Bethany.
Okay.
The Apostle Paul and A.W. Tozer.
Okay, very Christian table. Well, I guess very Jewish.
I should have probably had an atheist or someone. That would have just been a lot of fun. But the reason for the four is each one of them in their own unique way were passionate pursuers of the presence of God, and I would love to know and glean from them in different times of history and different styles and particularly like Mary of Bethany. We don't know a lot about her, but just this woman who sat at the feet of Jesus and then anointed his feet with oil and probably didn't know how significant it was.
Yep.
It's just, you know, we can get passionate about ministry and growing the church and raising leaders, but in 30 years of ministry, there are times I really felt I haven't always been passionate for the presence of God, and I think those guys could teach me a thing or two about, come on, Rob, get that fire in you. It's all about him. to him, for him, because of him.
Well, I love it, Rob. A couple of murderers around the table as well, so you just want to watch yourself during meal there.
Well, yes. Yeah, they're all got a past. We've all got skeletons. And
we've all got a history. People,
I haven't got a skeleton in my closet. I've got a cemetery, you know. I've got a
the crypt is in there.
It's all in there.
Rob, thanks so much for joining us in the hub, and this will be really
thoroughly enjoyed. Thank you, John, for the invitation. I feel, so honoured to be able to, speak to the guys. But for you personally, over the, 20, 30 years, you've had a huge influence in my life. Very grateful for, the John Finkeldis in my world. So thank you, John.
Cool. My pleasure, mate. Thanks for joining us. Bless you.
See you guys.